accession number 22074, reel 2.
Frank Quelch, reel 2. So, I mean, at hard living conditions because of the weather, really, at Longfield, but quite a comfortable billet, really. How did the locals receive you?
Don't remember, really. No. Nobody used to interfere much with them.
Yeah. So you didn't have a lot of contact, really, with the local people around Longleat. And where were you, where was HQ? You know, were you actually in Longleat Park or in the house? Or?
No, we used to go down into Longleat Park for our training, you know, marching and running about and skating on the ice. But the headquarters, I think, were away at Mere.
I think
it was Mere. Never had reason to go there.
Yeah. So the training went on. How long were you at Longleat altogether?
I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do you remember where you
went? Went to Warminster after there,
yeah.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Was that in the summer, was it? Or?
Yes, it was after Dunkirk time anyway, because we were expecting the Germans to come, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So, Warminster, of course, was quite a big.
Yeah, I don't remember where we were billeted or where we lived, but I remember we were put in charge on guard, guarding the stores.
Really?
Yes, and some chaps found it very simple to get under the tent flaps, you know, but there's nothing worth pinching in there.
Okay. So these stores were in tents, were they?
Yeah, marquees, yeah.
Yeah.
You could sort of get under the flaps, you know, and all we found was button sticks and, you know, no binoculars or anything interesting.
Or food, but
we were the worst ones to guard near camp, yeah. We weren't there long, because we went from there to Wellingarden City.
Oh, right, yeah. Whereabouts in Welling?
In the drill hall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
what did you think about going there?
Well, it was very nice there. It was the first sort of civilised place we've been to.
Uh-huh.
The people were very nice round about. We used to have to dig slit trenches for them, you know, to dive into. And
what, in their gardens? Or?
Yeah, the end of their gardens, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the people there had sons away and they were all well off, I think.
Yeah.
It was a hilarious time, really, because some lady would say, right, we'll have four of you tonight, and you'd have a meal and have a bath afterwards, you see, because bathing was always a problem. And used to be very pleasant, you know, everyone's so friendly. And then when you're on guard, you're sitting there, and a woman, a maid, presumably, would come along, young bird, would come along with an address, you see, and you'd have to go there at tea time, and you'd knock on the door, and the maid would come to the door, and great big tray laden with goodies, you know, and sandwiches and stuff like that. Yeah. And the officers used to come along and look at it, you know, and he's in there.
So it sounds as though the army had appealed for local people to welcome the soldiers.
Well, they liked us. They liked us.
Yeah.
Because apparently after we left there, I don't know who they had there, Scots, Cosbys or Coilies or somebody, and they're a bit rough, and they wanted us back, so they could have us back, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is 1940, so, I mean, a lot of bombing was going on by then, wasn't it?
Yeah,
did you hear a lot of that? No, not at that time.
But
could you hear bombing when you were at Welling? Because that's not that far from London, is it?
No.
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 So it was quite a peaceful time for you.
It was, yeah.
Yes.
Very pleasant, I thought, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But a long way.
Didn't get any leave until 1941. Then there was bombing in Portsmouth,
So, Welling, you continued training then. Did you get? Had you got any more weapons by this time?
No, same 2 pounders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Funny story.
Okay.
I joined the Air Force afterwards. Even though I was wounded, the Air Force were glad to take me. It was a good time to join. And I was up at Blackpool where we used to do our training, technical training. And I was in a model club. And there was a young chap next to me. And somebody said he lived in Wellington City. Oh, I said, I was stationed there during the war. Oh, yeah, he said he was all interested, you know. And then he said, did you used to have 46 on your trucks and guns? I said, yeah. He said, do you know Gunner Ash? I thought, yes, I do know Gunner Ash, but he was in a different battery when he was a bit of a rough chap. You know. I said, I don't know where he lives, though, because my sister would like to meet him. don't know what happened to him originally. Yeah, that's funny.
Perhaps a little surprise behind him.
Yeah. Yeah, so he still had two painters then, that's right. Yeah.
So were you at Welland for long?
Don't really remember. I can't remember the dates. Mm. I have no record, you know.
Yes, yeah.
But from there we went to Chatham.
Chatham, right.
Yes, in bombed buildings. We were at right by Short's aircraft factory, which was bombed frequently. Mm. And we were in these bombed out houses at Davis Estate.
Right.
Top of Primrose Hill or Bluebell Hill or something.
Yeah. So that was another sort of big centre, wasn't it, Chatham?
I used to go skating regularly.
Did you?
I used to go down to Rochester and roller skating. Mm.
A lot of military
around
Chatham.
Oh, yes, a lot of other units,
1940, perhaps, wouldn't it? 41?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. So, what were you actually doing there? Any changes in your training, or were you still doing much the same?
It's the same. I don't remember where we got the six painters. Mm. I don't remember.
And did you do schemes?
All the time. But some were quite interesting little ones. But I think it was Exercise Tiger was the big one, and that was a bad one because a lot of people got killed.
Mm. Do you remember going on that exercise?
Oh yeah, yeah. I used to love exercises. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you?
Oh yeah, it's great, and do your own cooking and stuff like that. Oh yeah. Yeah. But.
So what did you do on Exercise Tiger?
Drive and fire blanks in the gun, you know. Mm-hmm. But ferrets can get so rough. There was another lot. There was a night attack coming off. And because I was a driver, I wasn't involved. I wasn't on the gun, you see. And I remember I was asleep in the back of the truck. And I was woken in the middle of the night and I looked out and there's these hooded, or these black-faced Scots. And they grabbed on me and said, who are you? What are you doing? I said, oh, I'm the driver. All right, mate. And they cleared off, you know. So that's all right, you know. But that same exercise, apparently they're loading their, guns, their Bofors guns, you know, with blanks. Mm-hmm. But they're putting grease up the barrel. You can imagine, a lump of grease can do some damage. Mm. Yeah. But a lot of exercises. A
lot of emphasis on the exercises then. Was it, that was the big test, was it always?
Oh yeah, the exercises, yeah. Another lot, maybe the same exercise. There's a brain carry going along with a load of these Scots in, and our lot were on top of a high bit and they're throwing great clods of earth then on them. Of course, it upsets them, you know.
Probably does, yeah.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of rivalry between different regiments?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's a funny thing about that, though. You'd have this rivalry between the next troop. I was in J troop, and K troop would be another lot. You see, rivalry between the two. But then within the battery, you'd your battery, 233 battery, would have rivalry with 235 battery. But when it came to the punch crunch, you all joined in together. There was no rivalry, you know. But there was an immediate rivalry between guns, even. You know, the faster to get into action and things like that. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I suppose it was a spur to the training, wasn't it? Sort of competition, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, who was the best, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It used to take 22 seconds to get the two-painter into action, normal way, yeah. But we did it in six.
Did you? How did you manage that?
Well, we had a couple of great big monsters, Tom Bond from Exeter. He could shave in the morning, have to shave again at lunchtime. He was a man, you know. And another big fella. They used to take the end of the gun and two and three would lower the legs down. And they would take the gun and lift the whole gun up on the extended leg. We'd whip the wheels off, into action, 6 seconds.
Really?
In fact, I don't know if it was a brigadier or somebody was very impressed. We all had a pint of beer. Mm. But it's never adopted. that drill. You could do it if you had to.
Yeah, exactly. So Chatham, what was the social life there? Because, I mean, there was a lot of military around there, wasn't there?
Yes, there was, yeah.
What did you do in your spare time?
I don't remember. Skating, so I used to go down as much as I could skating. In fact, I got off a guard to go skating. They introduced stick man. You know, if you're especially clean and tidy, you get off a guard. So one of my skating nights, I was on guard. I really polished up and I got off and I was then skating. Yeah.
So, I mean, did you go in the pubs in the town? Or?
I wasn't a big pub person, no. No, honestly.
I suppose you were quite short of money too, weren't you? I mean,
yeah.
They had a naffy, did they?
Oh, yeah.
You always had a naffy, did you?
You know what naffy stands for, don't you?
No.
I won't go into it. No ambition and very little interest,
right.
Really. Yes. Or never have any fags in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you stayed at Chatham for how long?
Don't remember. Went on, they became mechanics then, that's right. That's right, we got the six-pounders at Chatham.
Right.
That's right, because we had to go on courses, because we had to drive these track vehicles, these Lloyd carriers, we all had to be drive mechanics, not drivers, you see.
Right.
So I went to Cunningham's Garage at Gillingham, and it was said he was a relative of the Cat's Eyes, or the well-known Cunninghams, you know, where he was, I don't know. But anyway, we did a course there, and we all passed it. I was disgusted at that, because some of our fellows were really thick, and they wouldn't pass anything. They all passed just the same, so it sort of lowered your efforts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, sort of excellence was a bit mixed, wasn't it? I mean, you know.
We all had to be driving mechanics. I've got the date.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, that was out.
So you were driving the Lloyd.
Yeah, Lloyd car. I used to love driving that.
Did you?
Yeah.
How difficult were they to drive? Did they have a wheel or?
No, these things. It's very technical. It was a Ford truck, 30-hundred-weight truck, going backwards. Someone had a brilliant idea. Carden Lloyd was the man, I think, the engineer that thought of that. You got the engine here normally, haven't you? You know, and the prop shaft in here and a back axle there, haven't you? He knew that if he took the back axle and clamped it and rotated it 180 degrees, you had four reverse gears and one forward gear. So if you sat the fella at the other end there, so the engine's behind you, you've got a vehicle, you see.
Right.
And that's what it was. That's all it was. But it wasn't very robust. You had to take all hills and slopes straight. If you went like that, diagonally, it would twist, you know, and things, the brakes would go on, or all sorts of things. But it had no strength, you know, but it's all right for a towing vehicle.
Right.
The tanks used them for slave carriers. They used to fill them up with batteries and go around for starting the tanks, you know.
Right.
A useful little vehicle. I enjoy driving it. Driving next course, December 41.
Right, okay.
Cunningham's Garage, Gillingham.
What other courses had you done by this time?
Oh. Trade test with drive mechanic, yeah. DM gas chamber, what's that? DM gas chamber.
Oh, so you'd done gas precautions, had you?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did you take to that? Because that can be quite frightening.
Oh, yes. They used to get you running around inside this darkened room and say, right, take your gas mask off. And go out, you know, but by then, of course, you got a few sniffs or whatever it was, tear gas or this other stuff, DM, I can't think what DM is. Mine laying course, yeah.
Oh, right. So you did mines as well?
Oh, yes. I had to.
What sort of mines were you using?
We didn't have any personally, but you had to be able to identify the German mines and booby traps and things, you know. And I've been on this course, and when I came back, we were at Westgate then, you know, it's near to Margate, you know.
Right.
I had to go to Margate Beach the night before, bury all these bricks in the sand, okay, and you always got a sort of a map, you put a white stone somewhere or something, that's your identity, and your compass, you know where the rest of them are, you see. So overnight, the tide had come up, the next day, there's not a sign of them. It's beautiful, you know. So I had to take all these herbs, all my mates. Say, and I'm demonstrating, I'll dig up the first one with your bayonet, you know, you creep along and you do all that. And that was good, you know, but I still didn't like being a front man, you know.
So were you a corporal by this time?
Bombardier.
Bombardier, right? Yes. When did you get made up to bombardier?
Should be in here, isn't
it? Quite early on, by the sound of it.
It's funny, we had a mate, this major I was telling you about, he didn't think I wanted to be a bombardier. Because I hadn't saluted him once, we're on, this is still 1939. And I've been sent down to get a spanner or pair of pliers from the where the vehicles were and taken back up to where the gun was. And as I went back up this hill, I didn't have my hat on. And the major was walking down the other side, quite a long way away, you know. So I didn't have a hat on, I just more or less carried on. Quells, don't you salute an officer? So I started. Sorry, sir, I didn't have my hat on, you know. He said, you turn your head and eyes to the right, or they do, you know. He said, don't you want to be an NCO? I said, well, not me, sir, you know. I think he remembered that. Men's Minds course. Because that's when I was bombardier. 1943. So he left us about 42, I think. And immediately he'd gone, I was bombardier.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were at Chatham.
Yes.
And you were billeted in bombed houses, were you?
But yes, right, yeah.
That was a bit...
The Davis Estate.
Wasn't it?
It was. Some had no doors, you know, and things
Davis
like that.
Davis Estate.
Davis Estate, right. Yeah. Davis. That was the builder, I suppose. Mm. Yeah. Where did we go after that? Oh, we went to Herne Bay.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Herne Bay after that.
Yeah. What was that like?
Oh, it was great. Great.
Mm. Was this in the summertime?
Summertime, or? Very hot, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Were you under canvas or...?
No, in houses.
Houses again. Mm-hmm.
And another little funny thing. Our cook was a boxer, a Londoner, Clements. Anyway, we were in these houses. And we had my mate, Robbie, had a radio.
Ooh.
Weren't many radios about in those days.
No.
He had this American radio. And anyway... Clements, the cook, had it playing, you know, on the table while he was doing it. In this house, he did his cooking outside. And the major came in on an inspection, radio, turned it off. So he carries on around, and Clements, the radio stopped. He went back in and switched it on like they do, you know. And this went on till the major stood by it. You don't play radios in working time. You know. That's a funny thing happened to me. This major, Sergeant Major, oh dear, I wish I could remember his name. I dodged church parade on Sunday, and I was back in the billet, this house, Herne Bay, yes, right, and I was up in the loft, and the cook had given me some loot to take home, Spam and stuff like that, you know, corned beef and all that. Because as you had gun teams, you had to have, you know, stores to cook and whatever. Any extra was yours, you see. So anyway, I was up in the loft and I heard this motorcycle, and it could only be the BSM, Battery Sergeant Major. And I rapidly got down, you know, but he was walking up the path and coming in the front door. So I rapidly back up the hole again. I couldn't put the bit down, the flap down, so I'm perched over this hole like a spider. And he's standing right below. I could have tapped him on the head. And he's looking in the various rooms, you know. And he went off. If he'd looked up, or if my stomach had rumbled, or in here, I'd have been rumbled. Yeah, you remember, a lot of happy times, you know,
yeah.
Fun times. Yeah.
So, church parade was one thing you liked missing, did you?
Oh, yeah, all did, yeah. I mean, not religious, you know. He never said, where were you? He forgot about it, you know.
Did you have a battery padre?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. We used to sing the hymns when you did go, you know.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
What was the padre like?
Nice chap. Mm. Couldn't tell you what his name was.
So, Herne Bay, more exercises, I imagine. And,
oh, yeah, I expect so.
So it went on.
Yeah. Different shaped exercises, you know, depending on what sort of battles they were planning, you know.
So how did the 6-pounder differ from the 2-pounder? I mean, you had to learn a new gun and new procedures, I suppose.
Yeah, well, lucky you reminded me, yeah. Because what happened, with a 2-pounder, you had a telescope about that long, had a nice big rubber eyepiece, and you could stick your eye on it, you know. And beautiful, you know, it's a crosswise, and you can plonk away, no problem. With a 6-pounder, had a little thin telescope about that long. And fortunately, we weren't the first to fire it. We'd gone down to lid ranges, mm-hmm. and we were waiting outside for the battery to come off. They all come off, they all had bandages around their heads. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no one had thought to tell them that with the six pounder, you don't put your eye on it. You hold it back there and look there. Because the gun leaps at you when you fire. Can you imagine? You've seen them leap in the air. And another thing you learned about the 6-pounder, you didn't sit on it. In the 2-pounder, you had a little seat, a nice little seat to sit in, you know. But on the 6-pounder, you sort of sat across it. And if you did, you got a painful. So you learned to sit side saddle, you know, and do it. You learned things like that. But we were lucky we weren't the first ones to fire it.
So good. You'd heard all these horror stories before you...
Very good gun, yeah.
So how quick was it to fire? I mean, you had the same number of men on the 6-pounder, did you, in a team?
Yeah, roughly.
I mean, a bigger missile, obviously.
How was it different
in other ways? Really?
You found
this a huge improvement, did you?
Yeah. As always, when you fire, right, there's a big flash in front, and you can't see what, you know... And the dirt flies up, Good gun.
Yes, yeah. And is that the one you took into action?
No.
Eventually, no. Right, okay.
Well, it's such a good gun, the Americans had it. Yeah, the Americans used our gun.
Did they?
They called it something else, but it's still a 6-pounder.
Oh, it was your 6-pounder, yeah. Oh, right. So you stayed at Herne Bay for a fair time?
Yeah, about so.
Right, okay.
Then where we go, Westgate, I think. I don't remember, straight from Herne Bay.
That was Margate, was it?
Westgate.
Yeah.
And so that's when we had the 17-pounders, so rather fancy.
Right. Uh-huh.
43, that was.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So what's the 17-pounder like? That must be a bit of a different beast.
Oh, it's an enormous gun, yeah. Oh.
You wouldn't get 17-pounders.
Yeah, that's the weight of the projectile, yeah.
Right.
Why they didn't use an anti-aircraft gun, not the Germans did, I should never know. Because the Germans won the war, practically, with their 88mm.
Right, yeah. So, the 17-pounder, I mean, that's quite a different...
It's a big gun, yeah. It had more men, 7 in the gun team.
7 in the team, yeah. What were all the jobs there, then?
Well, the number one, because of this big flash, the flash would fill this room. Honestly, yeah, and bang. First, we went to one, before we had gone to France, we were still at Lark Hill, and we fired the 17-pounder. Honestly, it's just like somebody gone on my face, you know, really smacked my face with a blast, yeah. And suddenly a sheet of corrugated iron came floating down from the sky. Where it had been laying previously, I don't know, but it had been sucked up into it, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh, so really they had to sort of teach you this gun from scratch, really, yeah. So what are the jobs of all the 7 people, then?
Well, number one, he's by now we've got head and breast sets, you know, same as you've got there, because you've got a shade across for the order. So the number one could be laying out there, you know. He's watching the target and relays his range and whatever to us.
So communication is by what?
Phone line. And once again, number two was the loader. Number three was the layer, the one that fires it. Number four was the ammunition man. Number six, also an ammunition man. But number five, that was moi, stands there with his head above the gun shield, you know. You're the only one that's showing. Number five.
Oh, really? How did you get to be number five? Were you just told, or...?
Oh, yeah, because you're a bombardier, and you relay the orders to the layer, you see.
Right.
So you get 500 yards come in your earpiece, you see. So you put 500 yards on the range, and then the speed the tank's going, the target's going, you tell the, you know, shout in the gunner's ear, you know. Oh, yeah.
So that took a bit of getting your head round, really, first. So you had to do learn a completely different manoeuvre in a different sized team, and, yeah.
But everyone could do each other's jobs. Mm. When you did your gun drill, you changed round. Number one would be the fellow who was loading the gun last time. You know, but in case they were knocked out, somebody could still carry on, you know. Yeah.
Did you ever think you'd get killed?
Never. I never thought we'd lose the war, any time. I knew we'd always win, because we're British, you know. But I never, honestly, when you look at the daily papers, you see the map of Germany getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, they took in this place and that place, and they were doing really well in Russia, you know, but never did think we'd lose, ever.
Right. So how closely could you follow what was going on in the war? I mean, you had newspapers regularly.
Yeah, that's another thing. ABTA, Army Bureau, APCA. Current affairs, and we had an officer, a Londoner, another boxer, and he'd have you in there on a, you know, a lecture, and he'd say, right, what happened in Turkey? You know, and if you couldn't answer, you're supposed to know, yeah.
Oh, really? So he expected you to know exactly what was going on?
Oh, yeah, keep up, yeah,
on,
yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's different to some other regiments and so on, yeah.
Even in Normandy, you got a... a newsletter come round, a news sheet, you know, the 43rd Divisional sheet, I suppose, come round with whatever happened anywhere.
Yeah.
I thought you might like to know.
What they wanted to tell you.
Yeah.
So did you listen to the radio, I mean, when you were in the UK?
Yeah.
Did you sort of make a point of listening to the news on the radio?
No, I wouldn't get mad over it.
Busy doing other things, then.
I think so, yeah.
Right. So with the 17 pounder, I mean, presumably you took that out on exercise, did you?
Oh, yeah. The first time we heard, I'm quite pleased about this, I heard the officer say, well, you must have a good driver for this, you know, must have a good driver. I don't know what they're talking about, you know. But later on they called me and said, would I take the gun on the back of a three tonner, which wasn't a gun truck, it was a stores truck, and, take it from A to B, you know. But be careful when you go round the roundabout, because due to the weight of the gun and the fact as you go round a corner, the CG would drop, the back of the gun would lift the back wheels of the truck off of the ground. Yeah, it was really a heavy gun, and yet you could balance it like that once you've got it there. But lifting it off the ground is very heavy. Really? If it's gone too far, of course, it's very heavy to bring back.
Oh, excuse me.
Is that you?
So, I mean... driving that round, I mean, it was a whole different ball game, the size of this gun.
Oh, it was, yeah.
So did it make a difference having this gun now in your schemes and practices and so on, to what they could do, to the tactics that were done in manoeuvres and so on?
Oh, yeah, well, it's different to fire it. Once again, you had a seat to sit in.
Yeah.
I mean, this time you fired a sort of, you pressed in on a big mushroom, you know. All different ways of doing it.
And how far did this go? I mean, did this go a lot further, or was it just
a bigger missile? Across the channel.
Right.
Oh.
Right, okay, yeah. You tell me, I don't know, you see. And
yeah, terrific.
Nor will people in years to come, yeah.
Terrific gun, yeah.
Right. So how was it actually used then? Did you use that in France?
Yeah. Got a tank with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, you can tell me that when we get there then, yeah. So this meant, this was a different dimension, wasn't it, to the... battlefield armory.
Oh, yeah. We had different trucks. We didn't have track vehicles. We had these quads.
Mm.
You know, it's a set of truck covered with metal. Because the idea was, if they drop mustard gas on you, it wouldn't get tactical. It wouldn't get you, you see.
We did a lot of gas precautions, didn't we?
Gas capes. Yeah,
that's it, yeah.
I remember this major saying once, he used to come in early in the morning, if he saw someone asleep in bed with a gas cape over his bed, trouble straight away.
Mm.
He said, he used to get it from other people, I suspect, you know. He said, sleeping is a short term of death, he said. And if I find anybody under one of these gas capes, you know, they're pretty, you know, really having a good sleep, he says, you're on it, you know. So he didn't use it.
Why was that particular?
I don't know. Used to be a luminous sort of thing. It was cover your bed. And you'd wake up in the morning all wet because it's, and you really were.
Yes, they didn't.
Took
breathe,
a long time to break up, to wake up. Mm. Yeah.
Frank Quelch, end of reel 2.